and what it will mean for individuals with health and social care needs. I think the first thing to say is that actually we've been delivering the Big Society for a very, very long time. Sue Ryder has a network of 9,000 volunteers working around the country in lots and lots of different roles.
What sort of roles? What are you doing at the moment?
So we have 350 charity shops, and they might be working in one of our charity shops. But then you might have, we have a masseuse, for example, and she'll come in and she gives everybody living in one of our residential care centres a massage. Or there's a gentleman who's taken over an enormous plot round the back of one of our hospices. He grows fresh fruit and veg there, and then everybody who comes into the hospice and their family has fresh fruit and veg. And, you know, these are just examples of some of the things that we can have. And I suppose that where we're going is looking at what volunteers can do to help, you know, to directly help with some of this care delivery.
Yeah, but can you do more for less?
Well, you can do more for less in some respects. I think what you can do, for example, is you can send a volunteer round to an individual's house to walk their dog if they want to keep a dog and they're not able to get out and about to walk it. So in some sense, that's doing more for less, isn't it? Because you're providing more for that individual. But no, I wouldn't say that we can compromise on quality. Absolutely not. And, you know, I wouldn't also say that we can do something that, you know, that means that a person won't live in dignity. You know, we should never have volunteers delivering personal care for an individual, for example.
Dr. Field.
I think the voluntary sector, the charity third sector, is going to have a really important role to play. Yes, sort of big society ideas are great, but with the commissioning of GP services, from GPs of services both in the community and also, for example, hospice care, I think you'll see more involvement of, for example, Macmillan, Marie Curie, in providing care for patients who are dying. I mean, more people die in hospitals than we should have because they want to die at home with their loved ones. And we've been quite restricted on how we've spent money in the past. And I think in future we can have a much better way of doing things, working with charities. And that interfaces, links in then to the volunteers as well. So it's not just about people doing things free. It's about improving the quality, improving access to care, and actually paying for it as well.
So how should charities be planning for the spending review and the impact of that?
Well, and the meetings I'm having nationally in London are with Macmillan and Marie Curie, MS societies. They're doing a number of things. One is they're helping write the sort of plans that might want to be designed, commissioned for patients. Diabetes UK, for example, has done a lot of work over a long time looking at the standards for care. And then, so they're involved in the standards, but I think increasingly, for example, in Birmingham, you might find that particularly in the hospice sector, looking after dying patients at home, that we'll start to place the contracts with them in order to keep people out of hospital. Hospitals are incredibly expensive, and people don't want to be there because care can be better in the community where their loved ones live and work, and that's what we've got to try and do.
And this is something absolutely that we're working on. Sue Ryder's the second largest provider of specialist palliative care in the country, and actually something that has become more and more a priority for us is keeping people in their own homes so that they can die at home if that's their choice. So we have schemes like a community matron scheme where a trained nurse will be going out and will be providing that expert medical care to a person. We're also working very closely in partnership with GPs, for example, to prepare them for the changes to commissioning. So we're going out, we've spoken in one area to two-thirds already of our GP practices to try and tell them about these services, about what we can provide, and about the choice at end of life.
So I think one of the dangers of the voluntary sector, there's a danger in the voluntary sector involvement in that if we contract the voluntary sector to provide main services that we usually deliver through social care and healthcare, and we have too tight contract mechanisms with them, what you can find is the voluntary sector act like any other provider because they're too closely tied down. And one of the joys of the voluntary sector is its flexibility. It's the fact that it can fill the gaps that other people don't meet. And if the big society becomes a lot of contracts with the voluntary sector to deliver the mainstream health and social care services, I think we'll be missing something there.
You mean a whole lot of new quangos to replace the old ones?
Not so much new quangos, but new. It's a different relationship. If you're a commissioner in Health and Social Care Service and you're contracting with a voluntary organisation to provide a particular service, that's a different relationship from a voluntary sector coming up from the community, raising money, engaging with its patients and service users, and coming up with the ideas themselves.
Well, it is a risk, but I mean, if you look at drug and substance misuse services across the country, Turning Point, which is a non-for-profit organisation, started charitable sector, or Terence Higgins Trust, They provide fantastic care, better than many current NHS services. They provide them under the NHS banner. That doesn't stop them doing their more charitable, more voluntary work, and it's an understanding of where the boundaries are. I mean, David Cameron keeps quoting where my practice is for some reason. It's not me. It's, he says it's Borsall Heath. It's actually Edgbaston, where, you know, we were the main red light area about 6 or 7 years ago, and the local population and Gisela Stewart from the opposition party actually did all that work cleaning up the area.
Yeah.
That's his big society model. Now, extending that from the bottom up, looking at charities, working with them, is fantastic. But you still need, you're quite right, health services. And you still need social care services. But there's too many silos at the moment. Let's bring it all together and focus on the needs of the patient and the family.
So, Blanche, how should the charities, like your own, be planning for the spending review?
Well, obviously, we're planning in terms of thinking about quality, as I've said, and thinking about how we're not going to compromise about on quality. But some of the basic things that we're doing is we're investing now. So we're really ramping up our fundraising efforts, for example. We are opening a whole raft of new shops in the next few years, taking that from 350 to 500
shops. Too much pressure? Too much pressure, or can you cope?
I think we can cope, absolutely. I think we're well placed to do it. And actually, the places that we work, the support from local communities is absolutely fantastic. And I think we mustn't underestimate how much people are really willing to get in there and get their hands dirty.
Yeah, but Robin, people are going to be hit from several sides.
Yep.
Cuts to social services budgets, cuts to benefits and welfare. It's going to be a worrying time.
I think you're absolutely right, Ed, and I think vulnerable people tend to access a range of service and be dependent on a range of benefits. And there is a real danger with the cuts that it's those most vulnerable people who have the smallest voice who'll be most affected. Mm. And I think there is a responsibility on us all to make sure we try and capture what's happening to those people and represent that nationally.
Steve, are there examples we can draw upon from abroad to help ease the pain?
Well, there are, but I mean, there are lots of examples of things locally which are good. I mean, if we just jump across the M1 to Leicester and you look at how they design their services for the homeless or for asylum seekers, absolutely brilliant services using existing contracts. There are examples. In America and elsewhere, they have a different system of how people put money in. They have different tax breaks in order to fund charities and work. But really, I think what we need to do is work as local communities. That's what we've tried to do where my practice is, which is, I guess, is why David Cameron's talking about it so much. But patients and the public need to be more involved in designing the care, wherever that is. And this is, as Robin said, not without its risks. There are going to be real cuts, and some services, particularly in the social care sector, are going to suffer. And what we mustn't do is just dump everything that can't be done, that needs to be done, on the voluntary sector. We need to design things with patients. And I think actually we can work much more effectively and much more efficiently. So I'm an optimist, but I'm always an optimist.
But Robin, can the big society help ease the pain of any cuts?
Well, I think we're all struggling to a degree to understand what the big society will actually mean. And also, I think
David's having a bit of a problem.
You could be right.
We could always ask Steve. He's working on the knighthood.
And the other...
that's naughty.
And the other issue really is about which communities will be able to exploit the advantages of the big society. And again, what we find is it tends to be the more articulate, the more professionally based communities that are able to exploit those opportunities, and the more disadvantaged communities that fail to do so.
Blanche, how do you view the future for health and social care in this country?
I think I view it as, I view it very positively, actually. I think that when you're talking about personalisation of services, then yes, this is something that's going to present very real challenges, but it's also a massive opportunity for us. It's a massive opportunity for our service users to say what they want, to say the kinds of services they want, and for the market to shape accordingly around that.
Robin?
What was the question again, sorry?
God knows. Now, how do you view the future for health?
How do you view the future?
Social care
I think there is. I think there's opportunity with GPs taking a lead. I'm worried about huge reorganisation, a time of financial challenge. Things may stop for the next 2 or 3 years. It'd be a shame if we lost some of the progress we'd made.
Yep, and the real danger is in the next 9 to 10 months in the transition to the new system. We've got to be very, very careful.
Thank you all.